Welcome to the Eco News Report. My name is Tom Wheeler. I am the Executive Director of the Environmental Protection Information Center, better known in these parts as EPIC. And I'm joined by my co-host and friend, Larry Glass.
Yeah, I'm Executive Director of the North Coast Environmental Center, as a matter of fact.
There we go. And of SAFE out right, in Trinity County. So wears many hats, Larry Glass. And we are also joined by a good friend, Maggie Gaynor of Zero Waste Humboldt. Hey, Maggie.
Hi.
We're talking about waste streams and eliminating them. And this is the bold concept of zero waste. So let's get into just very definitional things first of what the heck are we talking about when we talk about zero waste? And then we can get into some of the, you know, how do we do it?
Well, when I first heard about zero waste, it was in the early 1990s. It had become pretty popular in New Zealand. In fact, some of those folks came through this area, New Zealand and Australia and parts of Europe. And then it wasn't until 2011 that a group of us actually brought it to Humboldt County. It has an international set of principles that are all pragmatic on, you know, sustainability and about how we handle discarded material. One of them is that we strive to achieve the highest and best use of each material type. But heavy emphasis, much more so than in the past, on prevention, preventing waste generation in the first place. Then, once you've exhausted everything you can do up front, upstream, in the decisions and the planning for when you go shopping, or if you're in a business or a school district, you're purchasing procurement policies, then you move to materials reuse and recycling. It's really much more emphasis on those first two R's of the old mantra, reduce, reuse, recycle. They have been terribly neglected over the past 40 years. Not a whole lot more than lip service, green lip service.
Well, I know for my own self, whenever something's recyclable, you can kind of forgive yourself a bit. And you know, it's like, it's a single use water bottle, but I'm gonna put in the recycling later. So, you know, no harm, no foul. I'm just as green as anybody else.
So it is a part of a more contemporary approach that in the recent years is sustainable materials management. So we don't focus so much on the landfill and all of that. It is proactive, and it is really looking at, we don't even use the term waste as much as in the past. It's discarded material, and we're trying to make sure that everything gets used wisely and prevented from being discarded in the first place. So we have learned from research that, especially from colleagues in public health, everybody seems to understand waste prevention. I look in their faces and they get it more than, and I'll just give a quick example. You know, I've been through now over all these years, probably three or four different surveys of the public, and trying to just understand, what they know, preferences, you know, that kind of thing. And we'll ask, are there things that you do at home or in your business, your workplace, to reduce waste? And they say, absolutely, we recycle. And then we say, you know, how about, are there ways that you reuse materials at your home or in your business? And they say, you betcha, we recycle. And so we have learned, I mean, after 40 plus, almost 50 years of modern day recycling programs, it's time to rethink and assess where we are and learn from some lessons. I mean, come on, how many things stay the same effectively for 40 and 50 years? So, you know, I started out with flowers in my hair working at the Arcata Community Recycling Center. We were hippies. We worked really hard. We learned a ton. We just kept moving. But my God, times have changed. So
this is a continuation of an earlier movement, as you've kind of touched on. You know, the NEC was formed in part because of the Arcata Recycling Center. Is that right?
No, the other way around.
But yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, we were in existence, and then as a little project of the NEC, the Recycling Center started up.
That's right.
Right. So it is part and parcel. It is part of who the NEC is.
And it was considered, a lot of people don't remember this, but in the early 70s, if you were talking about recycling, you might as well have been selling Karl Marx's books on the street corner. I mean, it was considered pretty radical and over the top. And the conservative members of the community really just were irritated by the idea that you just couldn't use everything and just throw it away.
I was heckled pretty regularly in presentations to business groups and community organizations and everything because it was too radical. You know, you're never going to get people to separate and yada, yada. And, you know, it just was a ridiculous idea to them. It's interesting because I forget when, a while back we had a map of all the earliest community recycling programs in the country, you know, where you just pinpoint where they are, all college towns, every one of them. And it kind of evolved from there. The recycling programs grew, became more and more. In some instances, they become like a public utility. And so they went more and more, were subsumed into local government service or were contracted to a private hauler that often was the same hauler that hauled, collected the garbage.
And it was very different then, what was being recycled. It wasn't tons of plastic bottles because they weren't even around at that time. It was actually a lot of reusable stuff that was being repurposed and even within the community being reused, because I remember early on there wasn't even a market for this stuff. So it was just like, it was just there and we had to figure out ways to repurpose it somehow or other. And it was a big deal. I remember when Wesley found some market for, I don't even remember what it was, but he found some place where we could ship something that we were getting too much of. Maybe it was newsprint. I don't remember what it was, but something. And it was like this big deal. Oh, why? Mm-hmm. We can get rid of it. We can send it somewhere and they'll
somebody
use it.
Somebody will pay us for it.
Right. Right.
Yeah. Well, so the lessons we learned is it is a business. If it's anything, it's manufacturing. The value added comes with the manufacturing into a new product. But Larry's absolutely right. We had to become much more sophisticated. It's almost as if, I'm trying to think, there's many analogous situations. If you had a brilliant idea to manufacture some special kind of a widget and you started producing and you really hadn't quite figured out who are you going to sell it to, you'll fold. Your business won't last very long. And so we started developing more and more markets. We had more and more end-use markets, mills, paper mills, up and down the West Coast.
So one reflection on all of this is, you know, you're a leader locally in the zero waste movement, but I think that the zero waste movement is very much like what this recycling movement was of the early 70s, which is it is a youth-driven movement at the same time. So young at heart, but you know, the rest of your board and staff and you know the kids, and they really are almost kids that I see taking this and running to festivals and saying, you know, this needs to be a zero waste festival. This is another youth driven thing. So in the 70s, maybe recycling seemed like it was this crazy thing. And so hopefully, you know, this is what will become normalized is zero waste. We will reduce our total amount of products generated that need to be dealt with later in life. And we will reuse them better, and then we'll produce a smaller and smaller waste stream for the future.
You know, and I think some of it is the older you get, the number you get, yeah. You don't see things. It took young Casey at the NEC to suddenly say BS on our coastal cleanup program, because one of our sponsors is a big plastic water bottle purveyor. And she went, wait a minute, this is not right. We can't do this anymore. And so we decided to try and turn coastal cleanup into a zero waste effort. And it took her to see that. I mean, I guess I always saw it, but I just kind of got used to it.
You get used to it. I find that when I speak to business groups in the community that are close to my age, older, it is hard for them to hear this news because they have spent so much of their lives trying to do the right thing and in understanding that the be-all end-all would be recycling, never really thinking about waste prevention in the first place. And the younger audiences, Rotaract, HSU, they're all over this. They hear it easy. It's part of their lifestyles in many ways. I call it zero waste woke. You know, it's like they get it. And so, yeah, they're providing more and more leadership. And folks like Casey Cruikshank at the NEC are kind of like zero waste whistleblowers. They're like, wait a minute, this isn't right. You know, we have plastic bags, plastic gloves. We have a bunch of plastic, single-use plastic water bottles delivered to our teams that are going to be going out cleaning plastic off the beaches.
I remember she came to me with this idea, and she was like scared to present the idea to me. And I just sat there and listened for a minute. I went, that's great, Casey, go.
So we're telling the other zero waste organizations up and down the state of California, and they're going to be conferring with their beach cleanup folks, this inconsistency needs to be fixed. That's a good example.
It's fantastic. You know, it's the power of youth to recognize that the world doesn't have to be the way it is. And as we get older, we lose that. So it's fantastic. Let's tie this into kind of some of the broader environmental movement, because I think that to some, zero waste can feel like whistling past the graveyard. Is that the right idiom? It seems, you know, we're dealing with the climate crisis and the Anthropocene and these dark, heavy things. And then zero waste is not frivolous, but it almost appears that way. Oh, yeah, reducing what I individually am responsible for. But there is a very discreet tie to all of the other larger environmental movements. How is our waste stream related to, let's say, climate change?
Okay, great question. I have to tell you, I have been at HSU before and given a presentation, and the crowd seemed pretty pumped up and excited about what I had to say. And afterwards, a young person came up to me and said, this is the Zero Waste Humboldt organization. This is really cool. I'm really glad you folks are doing this. I myself prefer to work on global warming. And I thought, oh my God, you know, we need to continue to work on public. So there is a direct connection. In fact, it is one of the most direct connections. A few changes in the way, if in Humboldt County, our local governments all said no more single-use plastic water bottles, let's just confine to water bottles. And there's lots of single-use plastics. And they started to put some restrictions on it. It would have the same impact of, and I haven't done this calc yet, as a huge number of cars being taken off of 101. It is kind of shocking how much of an impact it really makes. There's lots of examples where they have done the calculations in larger cities. And so just reducing the amount of waste. And nobody...
creates pollution several times through its whole life. It keeps creating more pollution. And its breakdown products are more pollution. It's really astounding.
So I was going to say, the one part that nobody ever talks about is, again, in sustainable materials management, this is critical. In recycling, all the natural resources extracted, the energy and everything up front, upstream, in the production of these single-use plastic doodads and packaging, it's never considered. It's never discussed. It's never brought into the conversation very much. And now we're finding people are beginning to be aware that there's a lot of that bad stuff up front in the manufacture in the first place. So
it's extracted from fracking, and then it sends out pollution into the atmosphere when it's manufactured into the plastic. And then when it starts to degrade, it releases more into the atmosphere. I mean, I always laugh because I think of, there was a very popular movie in the 60s called The Graduate. Everybody's way before you were born, Tom. But everybody is very serious in this movie. It starred Dustin Hoffman. And everybody's very serious. He's a young man. And the guy comes up, he says, I have one word for you, son. plastics.
It's the wave of the future.
And it was this thing that was created that was unnecessary. We didn't really need it, but they convinced us that we all had to have plastic everything.
Better living through chemistry,
and
right?
And it became slang at the end of the 60s. If you didn't like somebody, you didn't like the way somebody behaved, they were very plastic.
Yeah. You've been listening to the Eco News Report. Maggie Gaynor is talking to us about zero waste living.
So now what's happening, and is really disconcerting to me and where I'm putting a lot of my emphasis, is recycling is becoming frequently used as an excuse by the manufacturers, the petrochemical industry, and others to continue to get to do what they do and make as much money off it as they can. And so, like, a study was just done. This report came out this summer, and there's many all over the United States, but this one happened to be among British consumers. The results of the study was exactly what you would imagine. When people are told that something is recyclable, they'll buy it over a reusable or less wasteful alternative. And so the companies that manufacture this, they know this. And so there's several nonprofits nationally that are doing a fantastic job, especially in plastics, of aiming and shaming. And they're calling them out. There's a lot more citizen science. I bring this up because I'd like to see more of this on the North Coast, the Redwood Coast in our region. There's a lot of good groups like the work that Casey at NEC does, and we need to have the numbers afterwards. So they do brand audits. They don't just go out and collect. They go out and they collect and they figure out what percentages of what they collected in litter is from different companies. And you can just guess which ones, you know.
McDonald's, right?
Coca-Cola, yeah. PepsiCo. There's five main ones worldwide. And then there's pretty much similar in the United States. And then October 29th, less than a month ago, three of those same companies had a big press conference in Washington, D.C. with the American Beverage Association, saying that they were going to put $1 million into helping recycling.
God bless them.
So the public is being bamboozled a lot. And where I have great hope is I'm starting to see people are getting on to them and getting the idea that prevention is better first. So, yeah, that press conference really did it for me with their big announcements of it's just like too little, too late. We need to work more on prevention.
So we're talking about bad guys, but I know that we also have a lot of local heroes. And one thing that I think is fantastic that you've done is that you are celebrating those people who are trying something different. So let's get into a couple of those, because you just awarded these heroes at a recent event.
We had a big party. It was our first annual, and so we'll begin to do this every year. So two things I'll say is this Zero Heroes will be once a year, and it'll be more connected to a brand new launch in January. Zero Waste Humboldt will be having a business certification program. And so when a business does the basics, more than just saying we're green, but they go through a process of, you know, that is required for certification, then they become one of our good guys. And it's Zero Waste Humboldt's job to promote those businesses. So Jeff Black, Dr. Black at HSU was one, because he has been so incredibly inspiring, so much so to students at HSU that they have made a difference in policy at HSU. Casey Cruikshank is another at NEC with her almost whistleblowing on the plastics that were being used by and promoted with the Coastal Commission in beach cleanup. Six Rivers Brewery has done some real innovative things over the past few years, and all of them are really good at tracking. Baseline data is a hallmark. It is a requirement for zero waste. You can't just say, we recycled a lot this year, but you begin by, we were at this point in 2016, and then this point in 2017. That's what is one of the defining characteristics of the zero waste method. Los Bagels is one of the early adopters. Their operations manager there, one of the co-owners, Eddie Blakesley, Mr. Can Do, positive attitude, got all the employees involved. And what they have accomplished there is amazing in reducing waste. oh, I'm afraid I might be missing. Oh, then there's another type of a group. They're businesses that provide a service that help everybody else reduce waste. And there's a couple, Stacy and Lloyd Barker, that own the Local Worm Guy.
Oh, yeah.
Fantastic what they're doing. Hardworking people. And my hope for them is that their business grows. It's very valuable to restaurants. And
why don't you explain that for folks that haven't heard of it?
Yeah, they take food waste and they use worms as their livestock and create a good soil amendment that you can also then purchase. But they have a fairly reasonable service of picking up a bucket. I think it, I can't remember. Well, you know, there's probably different levels to the service. I'm going to sign up because I have two rentals right next to my house. And so the three of us have enough. It's an easy out for backyard composting if it's hard to do that. And so, yeah, they collect food waste and then turn it into something that is a rich soil amendment.
All right. Yeah. So there's a direct business right there. And then if you're a business person, you can also think about this as a savings for yourself, right?
Absolutely. I mean, all of the businesses, I didn't mention the co-op. And as far as early adopters, they got going with you can buy using your own containers instead of having everything in boxes and bags and plastics and everything in 1974. And so they're one of the early adopters. But yeah, the sweet spot for all of our local businesses is when you're not only doing something that is good for the environment and makes your customers loyal and happy, but you save money. And there's two main ways that they save money, really measurably reduce their costs. And that's if they're regularly purchasing single-use supplies regularly, and they convert to a reusable system or washable system or whatever, there's an initial capital outlay. And then after that, you start saving. And then the other is what we call right-sizing. And both of the two examples that I gave in Six Rivers Brewery and Los Bagels, the containers that they use to have hauled of their garbage haul, and the frequency of the haul starts to go down, less and less and less. And it's a measurable way to save money. So all of these things add up. And I've noticed that as far as community partnerships and everything and shared resources, all of the ones that have done a really good job have found help in an HSU intern assigned to help them get started. Early on, there's some measurements to create that baseline and things like that. And then they're really good at converting, using calculator tools to convert how much waste you've saved into greenhouse gas emissions and carbon footprint. And, you know, and so that's all helpful.
So the holidays are coming up. And I was just thinking about the massive amount of waste that is going to be generated there. Let's talk about some tips for being zero waste in your own individual life.
Just wrote an article about this for the Mad River Union. There are several ways. I'd say events and parties. We'll start with that. So with zero waste, always, it's advanced planning. The more advanced planning you do, the more you can reduce waste. So know ahead of time, have handy a phone number or figured it all out ahead of time. If you have some edible, you know, some food left over, know where that can go to people who don't have enough food. And Food for People is our local go-to organization that knows where the pantries are and can give accurate information about that. Have containers on hand for your guests, whether it's a big event or it's a home party, so they can take leftovers home. There's been a lot of plastics over the past, I'd say, 20 years, used more and more just in holiday decorations. And that's not in vogue anymore. That's out. And I see even local florist shops and everything are all using more and more what nature has found objects, you know, gnarly twigs and, you know, making boughs and wreaths out of real boughs and wreaths, you know, from the forests. And then even all these little clever things, people love glitter. Well, now they're just using hole punches on yellow and green and red leaves. So they get to sprinkle that type of glitter all over the place, but it's all natural. And then when the party's over or the holiday season's over, it all goes outdoors again. The creation of huge amounts of packaging and boxes and everything from our Amazon, the delivery service world, shopping online, phenomenal amount of waste from that. I wish I could remember the statistics I used from, it's kind of mind-blowing. It's 25% more waste than Americans generate the rest of the year on average. And so it's in the time period before, right before Thanksgiving through the end of New Year's. And yeah, all the shipping may be more convenient, but we're finding now the amount of waste generated is unbelievable. Some of it cardboard, some of it is plastic and not recyclable or compostable.
Oh yeah, you get something delivered to you anymore and it's in a big bubble pack outer shell and then a plastic inner shell and then plastic inside of that. It's like three times the waste.
That's exactly, yeah, that's exactly what I described in my article. So what else? Gifts, gift giving. Again, I find Gen XYZ is way more hip to gifts of experiences, tickets to the movies or concerts or sports events. I'll repair your car for you. You know, all those kinds of things of either doing things together or just sending a coupon or a gift certificate, something that's more personalized, handmade and more personalized. People are doing that more. I see it happening around me, and it gives me great hope. There's about five main ways that people can just creatively plan ahead and reduce waste for the holidays.
And I have one from my wife's family from the East Coast. And this is something they've been doing for 30 years, is that for Christmas and for all holidays, they make little sacks out of cloth. And it is your reusable wrapping paper. So every gift gets stuffed into a bag that has a little drawstring and is put under the tree. And those bags have been used for now over 30 years.
Yeah.
And it is great for someone like myself who is terrible at wrapping presents. I can't do it to save my life, but I can put things in a little bag. So I get to feel good about myself because I am saving all of that paper waste. And then also I don't look like an idiot in front of my wife's family. So real easy, fun craft project to do. If you know how to operate a sewing machine, you can
make
do this.
A bag.
And that can be itself a wonderful present for somebody for the future.
Well, there becomes a fun part to it too. My husband's family uses and reuses and reuses for years, sometimes decades, the same wrapping paper. You just have to take
very
it apart very slowly.
Yeah.
And so now my daughter and I do that with our friends around Humboldt County, and it becomes hysterically funny because this wrapping paper is going back and forth and back and forth every other year. You get your old wrapping paper back. Yeah, it's really about getting together with family and loved ones and friends, and not so much about the stuff.
Yeah, I think that this making almost a game out of things. I think that environmentalism often appears that you're doing without. But I think that you can reframe it for yourself in that this is you get to be creative in doing things, in thinking about how you're going to get someplace or how you're going to wrap a Christmas present or whatever else. You turn it into some other part that is almost enjoyable in and of itself. And it makes it a little bit easier. You're not feeling like you're giving anything up. You're gaining an experience.
Absolutely. You know, there's one more part to that. Just an environmental lifestyle with that conscience and zero waste. Some folks conjure up an image of having to do without. And I think they almost think clutter and lots of little doodads and things in your kitchen because you're trying. It's actually the exact opposite. There've been the Zero Waste Home is a really popular book. And I call it Zero Waste Chic. And it's all about clean living and simplistic design. And I think that's part of the appeal for Gen X, Y, and Z is that is really their preference rather than having collections of all kinds of stuff around.
It's a less expensive lifestyle.
It is.
It really is. It's, and I think that's why it's being so eagerly adopted, is that
As someone from those generations who doesn't have any money, I can appreciate that.
Right.
Yeah.
So is there anything else you wanted to get into this episode?
I really would like to just mention that the city of Eureka is going for it. I'm real proud of them. I'm pleased. They have contracted with Zero Waste Humboldt to develop a Zero Waste Action Plan. And right now it's real important to them to have public input. They're really taking that part seriously, hoping that it will help them with the implementation. So I just heard this morning that 77 people have already submitted or filled out the survey. And people can go online for this baseline survey. It's the www.gozeroeureka.org/survey.
All right, gozeroeureka.org/survey. And where can people find out information about Zero Waste Humboldt?
Oh, they can go to zerowastehumboldt.org.
All right, so gozeroeureka.org and zerowastehumboldt.org. Maggie, thank you so much for joining us on the Eco News
today. Thank you.
All right, this has been the Eco News Report. Thank you for joining us for another episode. If you have a topic you want discussed on a future show, email me at tom@wildcalifornia.org.